On the Committee on State Government, Innovation, and Veterans will be in order. Today is Wednesday, February 1st, 2012. We're going to switch the schedule here as we wait for some members who have been involved in other committees are going to get here. So we're going to do a quick overview. And by the way, we were 2 minutes late. That clock is a little fast, so I want to make note of that. We're going to start here first with a quick overview, if we can, or do we want to do that? Let's do this overview while the members are coming here. The agenda, the overview of the Minnesota Assistance Councils for Veterans, MACV, if Kathleen Vitalis,
yes.
President, CEO, if you'd come forward, and we'll start that overview while we wait for the members to show up. Please state your name and welcome to the committee.
Thank you so much, Chairman Perry. Kathleen Vitalis, President, CEO, Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans. And there is a one-page overview of our organization that's included in your material. And we get a grant through the state every year. So I just wanted to give some highlights as to what our year in 2011 was like and what we're seeing with homeless and in-crisis veterans. MACV has been around. Many of you, I think, know us, but we have been around for 22 years with our mission of the homeless and in crisis veterans. Last year, we directly helped with some sort of rental payment, some sort of direct service, 967 veterans and their families in 72 counties in this state. So we used all of our funding and grants to effectuate those services. My staff, I have 25 full-time staff. We had over 25,000 contacts. So you have to look at the direct people that we actually helped, but also a great service we give is case management and referral in knowing where to send these veterans. We have three regional offices in Mankato and Duluth and the Metro that we outreach from. We also have two new outreach positions that started in 2011 from a new federal grant we were able to get, placing an outreach person in Detroit Lakes and one in Little Falls. Now, I should stop. One of the things that we are able to do with this important state funding that we get is leverage federal resources and foundation funding. I am always asked when I go in for federal grants and other resources what support we are already getting from the state. So we are able to really leverage every dollar that we get. The other thing I wanted to highlight briefly is our vet law program. We really got that going last year in providing legal clinics and legal services for veterans, not only through our stand-down events, which are like Project Homeless Connects that we do throughout the state, but also in separate legal clinics that we've been holding. We had 11 clinics in 2011 that served 428 veterans. Now, what we do at these clinics, and it's very important, any veteran is welcome. For example, the most recent one was held at the VA hospital in Minneapolis as a place to hold it. We have volunteers from the law schools. We have pro bono attorneys, child support, county veteran service officers all in one place, judges, so that they can really take care of some of these issues sometimes in the same day. They've been very, very successful and well received. We had six stand down events in 2011, and they were in, if I'm going to get all of these right, in the metro area. We had it at the Boy Scout Base Camp up by Fort Snelling. And Senator Daley, thank you for attending. He attended that event and talked with some of our veterans. In Duluth, Bemidji, Grand Rapids, Mankato, Rochester, and we had a one day in International Falls. So we try to bring these events around the state. And they're another way, another door in for some of these veterans that have a lot of barriers so that we can start to assist them with the places that they need to go. One other, as an example of this leveraging, as a nonprofit and leveraging money, I have a homeless veteran reintegration program grant that's a federal grant from the Department of Labor. We actually have two of them now, one for Greater Minnesota out of Duluth and one in the metro area. What I tried to do is give a number that we stabilized in 1 year, in 2011, 143 homeless veterans from homelessness to housing stability to employment, representing gross wages of $3.6 million. So that is a significant grant. Again, that grant supported by the state funding that helps us with the housing stability. So it all works together. The keys to our success for the leveraging are that we are a statewide organization. That also helps us to even get some national foundation money that we can leverage. Non-duplicated services, very key. We fill gaps in funding. I am often asked, how do you work with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs programs, with the CVSOs in partnership? We know what all their programs are. We all have different eligibilities, and we work together. We do not duplicate funding. That is very, very key, because that is an extremely inefficient way to do anything, as you all know. We have a very quick response time. Many partners and collaborators, as I've said, the county veteran service officers are key in all those 87 counties. We educate them as to what our programs are so they know when to call us. We focus on eligibility. We make the veterans extremely accountable for their own follow-up and trying to constantly look at making sure that they're doing what they need to do. You know, the old, we don't work harder than they do. It's a very accountable program with my staff. And the end goal, of course, is self-sustainability. We are not a entitlement program. We are not something that lasts 6 to 8 months. It is going in, looking, and filling a gap and getting this veteran and their family out of a crisis situation. So with that, I would take any questions, and again, whatever support the legislature can continue to give us. We do have a one-time allotment from last year of $100,000 that does end June 30th. So whatever you can give us for funding for these homeless and in crisis veterans in the state, we will leverage that money, and we will certainly put it to great use.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Well, first and foremost, you've been a great partner, and we've enjoyed working with MACV in the past, and everybody loves what, you know, every time I hear you talk and say how you're not duplicating dollars, of course, that, you know, gets me excited, because that means we're making sure the dollars are going in to the right areas, and we look forward to continued support and working with you as we move forward.
So, thank you very much, Jim.
Thank you very much for being here today. I think I was going to wait, and I see we have pretty much most of our members here. We do have a quorum, but most importantly, we want to welcome a new member to the committee, Senator Hayden. Welcome, and whenever you want to talk, make sure that microphone's pulled out in front of you there, Senator. All right. Do you want to say anything right now and introduce yourself to the crew and give us maybe a couple of seconds of background?
Well, first of all, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that, as we have already kind of established a relationship working on issues. So I appreciate you acknowledging me. I'm Jeff Hayden, and this is my fourth year in the legislature, but my first in the Senate. I spent 3 years in the House representing one half of South Minneapolis. I had the pleasure to serving with and now in her stead, I guess, the great Senator Linda Berglund and all of the great work that she has done. So I am anxious to get to work. I did serve on state government finance in the House, and so a lot of the issues that have come before us I have been able to monitor. But I'm glad to be here, and I'm looking forward to working with all of you. Thanks again, Mr. Chair.
Well, welcome, Senator Hayden, and let it be known that it's okay that you did serve in the House, but now you're in the upper body because we have a former House member with us as well. All right. You know, before I move on to the next, just a little housekeeping here that I'd like to have everyone know that I've taken the initiative, and I have established a subcommittee on reform and redesign subcommittee. And with that, we do have members that have been accepted to serve on that subcommittee. With the fact that last year, last session, we passed some very good, aggressive reforms that came out of our state government bill, and with the short time period that we have in this session, I felt it necessary. Many of you know I'm not one that likes to create any new boards or agencies or subcommittees, but I felt we have such a short time that this committee will not have the extra amount of time to take a look at the legislation that was passed as far as reforms are concerned and make sure that our intent from the state government bill is being carried forward. So that's why I've established this subcommittee. The members will be I've selected Sean Nienau to be the chair, Michelle Benson, vice chair, Ted Daly, John Carlson, Paul Gazelka, Al DeKreif, Carla Nelson. We have Senator Terry Bonoff, Kerry Dzik, Chris Senator Eaton, Senator Ann Rest, and Kathy Sharon will be members of that committee. And I know that their first meeting will be coming up next week after the break sometime, and that announcement will be happening. The letters are in your folders, by the way, members, so you can check on that. The next item on the agenda is Senate File 1527, Senator Dames. Members, this bill that we are hearing is because of an exemption to rulemaking, and that is part of our committee structure. And so I would ask that we focus on just that rulemaking part and not allow us to get into the weeds where our jurisdiction doesn't go. Welcome, Senator Dames. Please introduce yourself, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I am Senator Dames. I am here today to introduce Senate File Number 1527. Senate File Number 1527 is a bill for an act relating to agriculture, providing for voluntary certification of good manufacturing practices for commercial feed and feed ingredients. It also allows for the authorization of fees for voluntary certification, modifying rule provisions relating to animal feed, appropriating money, and amending Minnesota Statute 2010, Section 25.4, Subdivision 1 and 2, and by adding a subdivision, proposing coding for a new law in Minnesota Statutes, Chapter 25, repealing Minnesota Rules, Parts 1510-2220 and 1510-2230. A little background, the need for the bill. This bill creates a temporary fix to a problem facing some Minnesota agricultural companies that wish to export feed to Brazil. The problem exists due to a new Brazilian import requirement for a certificate of good manufacturing practices and compliance for all imports of feed and similar pending restrictions in other countries, specifically Mexico. The lag between the passage of the Federal Food Safety Modernization Act of 2011 and the implementation of this new law later this year, and in the meantime, we need something to take care of that space there. The lack of good manufacturing practices regulation for non-medicated feed. The Food Safety Modernization Act was signed into law in January of 2011. The FDA is expected to issue proposed rules during the early 2012 period. After the extended comment period, final rules are expected to be introduced later this calendar year. Those federal rules will have provisions for issuing good manufacturing practice certificates. Until the new federal law is fully implemented, there is no statutory basis, state or federal, upon which an exporting entity can obtain the type of certificate being required by Brazil. This is a temporary fix. This bill creates a process for issuing good manufacturing practices certificates for Minnesota facilities producing commercial feed and feed ingredients. It establishes temporary criteria for those good manufacturing practices. It gives the Minnesota Department of Agriculture the authority to inspect facilities upon request and the authority to charge a fee for such inspections, and requires that the new federal laws, once they are finalized later this year, be adopted by reference to provide quick transition in Minnesota. In conclusion, the temporary good manufacturing practices process set forth in this bill will allow Minnesota companies to meet the new Brazilian import requirements. until such time as the new federal Food Safety Modernization Act is implemented in Minnesota. This permanent regulation of the good manufacturing practices in non-medicated feed will come with the impending Food and Drug Administration's final rules later this year. A couple of things I'd like to point out is this is voluntary, and there's no cost for the bill because the charge, the cost of the inspections and the certification will be offset by charges to the business that's getting certified. So with that, I'll turn it over for any questions.
Thank you, Senator Dames. First and foremost, Ms. James, could you take us to the bill, what part that we will be dealing with here, please?
Mr. Chair and members, and if Greg Knopf will correct me if I've missed anything, but it looks to me like on page 6, lines 6.6 through 6.8 strikes some rule promulgation, and lines 6.20 through 6.24 and lines 6.29 through 6.31 all relate to rulemaking.
Council, do you agree, or would you want to walk through that with a little further explanation?
Mr. Chair, if you'd like, I can explain a little bit okay. more detail. I agree with the sections that that were elaborated on a few moments ago. What's happening here is under current law, you'll see the stricken language in sections 2 and 3 allow for the commissioner to adopt by reference certain federal rules. What this would do is rather than having the agency have to go through that process of adopting the Food and Drug Administration rules specifically, it would basically incorporate them by reference. So in section 4, you see that basically all the applicable FDA rules relating to feed would be adopted as the feed rules of the state. This is something we've done in other areas. It's also done with, and I pointed out in the summary, we do this for food rules right now. We have the same, basically identical language for food in the state, and this would do it likewise for feed. And this would allow the agency to move quicker when the new rules come out later this year for feed. So basically, if a section 4 is adopted, that's what the reason for the changes in sections 2 and 3. You don't need sections 2 and the language that's being deleted in sections 2 and 3, you don't need that language anymore if section 4 is adopted. So it's kind of a new process where we pick up those food and drug rules as state that they still apply to nationwide. It's just that we adopt them also as state rules so they can be enforced and used by the agency. And it would be important for this for these good manufacturing practices because those rules will contain rules regarding preventative controls for animal feed, which is what the good manufacturing practices are based on.
So in essence, Mr. Knopf, we're just getting rid of the duplication of the rulemaking process. Would you agree to that?
Mr. Chair, that would be correct. It would allow the state to just pick these rules up by reference without having to go through another process.
All right. Thank you. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Scary as it may seem, that was the exact same question I had you had, is what part are we looking at?
All right. Do we have any further questions on this?
Mr. Chair, I would like to point out that this bill was drawn up with the help of the Ag Department. So the Minnesota Department of Agriculture was very instrumental in drawing up this bill and are very supportive of the bill.
Thank you. Is there any further testimony here today to this bill? Senator Daley moves Senate File 1527 be recommended to pass and re-referred to Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevailed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dames. Okay, the third item on the agenda is an overview of veterans' employment. I believe we have Ms. Barb O'Reilly, Director of the Women's Veterans and Employment Programs Department and Veterans Affairs. And how?
Hi, Senator.
How are you doing? Please introduce yourself, and you may proceed.
Mr. Chair and members, I am Barbara Riley. I'm the Director of Women, Veterans, and Employment Programs for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. This is a new position that was started about 8 or 9 months ago when I joined the department. I would like to first of all start out by saying that as a veteran, I feel very strongly that hiring veterans is very good business. Our experience within the military with good work ethic and loyalty instilled within us makes us very good employees. We're resilient, and veterans, when you talk to them, they have this inner understanding that they can accomplish anything. When we go through basic training, when we complete our initial entry into the military, we have accomplished something. We're 18 or 19 years old for the most part, and we know that we can do just about anything because we finished basic training. What we need now as we transition from the military into our civilian roles is we need support. We need some help getting our resumes in order. We need some help building confidence, translating our military skills, and we need to get connected to employers. In Minnesota, there are many veterans and service members that are unemployed. According to the Bureau of Labor and Statistics, and I apologize, this is an old data point, in 2010, the unemployment rate among veterans was 12%. Looking at our unemployment in Minnesota today, it was 5.7 as reported by Deed in December of 2011. So over twice the rate of veteran unemployment as non-veterans in Minnesota. In Minnesota, Deed does not specifically track veteran unemployment as a category, so it is very difficult to actually say exactly what the unemployment rate of veterans is. But as far back as 2010, when the Minneapolis Veterans Administration Hospital did a survey of the Minnesota National Guard troops and the RINGS, Steady Resiliency and National Guard service members, that rate of unemployment among veterans was at that time twice that of Minnesota non-veterans. And so the challenge has occurred and persisted for quite some time. In 2011, Deed put together a survey and sent it to the Minnesota National Guard service members that are deployed in Kuwait. And what that survey showed was that there is an estimated 44% of those service members that are going to be looking for employment when they come home. It's a striking number. Also, as reported by Deed, there were 64,259 claims for unemployment insurance made between first quarter of 2009 and the third quarter of 2011. So what I'm stating is that unemployment among the veteran population in Minnesota is very large. Again, what do our veterans need? In Minnesota, we have over 381,000 veterans. There are also approximately 20,000 reservists who currently serve in the Minnesota National Guard or in one of the reserve components that are based in Minnesota. So we have a large veteran population. As I said, what we need is support in looking for employment, and we need an opportunity. Veterans will be most successful with assistance from intergovernmental agencies that provide them support with helping them translate their military skills, helping them prepare resumes, helping them prepare for interviews. They need to be connected to employers. They need to have skill in professional networking. They need to know how to use resources like LinkedIn. What I would also like to say is having recently retired and having recently gone through the experience of writing a resume, in the military, we have not had to look for jobs. For 22 years, I did not look for a job. For 22 years, I did not write a resume. for 22 years, I never talked about what I did because I did nothing. It was my team in the military that did everything. And that is the perspective of veterans throughout Minnesota. They don't talk about what they did. They talk about what they do together as a team because that's our culture. And so as they come back from the military and they try to transition into their civilian jobs, it is very difficult for them to talk about what they did, how they can translate their skills into meaningful things for employers. There are many military translators out there that if you plug in, these are online translators, where you plug in your military job into the database, and out spits a resume of what you supposedly did in the military. But I can tell you that, having recently done that, that my job as a 42 Bravo, a military personnel officer in the military, was nothing like what I actually did in the military. What the veterans require is one-on-one assistance. They have to have that. An online system is not going to be good enough. Since May 2011, we have been working as an intergovernmental agency, if you will, interstate agency, with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the National Guard, the DEED, and also representatives from MNSCQ, Department of Revenue, Department of Labor. MACV was involved in our agency, as well as many other organizations. And what we have identified is, once again, it is that personal challenge of trying to translate your military skills and experiences into meaningful things for a civilian employer. Very frequently, service members don't know what is out there. They don't know what they want to do. They don't know what they should be looking for. I think that many times there is the concept that if you were I will use cook because that's easy. If you were a cook in the military, then surely you must want to be a cook in your civilian life. And so we try to translate those skills directly from cook in the military to cook in the civilian world. Now, that may translate very well, but I may not want to be a cook. And so we have to, again, look at what are those skills. In the Guards and Reserves, we have a very unique population because we're in the military traditionally for a small part of the year. We deploy, and then we come back. But when we're not involved in the military, we're working, we have jobs, and we have civilian educations. And so a reservist actually brings so much to the civilian job opportunities, perhaps more than somebody who has served on active duty for many years. So we need to keep our minds open that a guardsman or a reservist may not want to be categorized as a cook or as a supply logistics specialist just because that's what they did in the military. What we also have identified through working with our interagency group is that there are over 1,500 resources, web-based resources, to help veterans find employment. It's absolutely overwhelming. So what we have identified is that we have successful processes already in place. We have the workforce centers throughout Minnesota that have veterans employment representatives already assigned to them. What we also have identified is that veterans, post-9/11 veterans especially, do not use the resources available in the workforce centers. So what our group has focused on is streamlining the process, communicating to the veterans that the workforce center is your first place to go if you are looking for employment. What we've also done is we have streamlined the process for employers. For many years, an employer would ask, what can I do to hire a veteran? We didn't maybe have a good or succinct and consolidated answer for the employer. What we're now communicating across the agencies is go to Positively Minnesota and post your jobs on Positively Minnesota. We've also told employers, go to the workforce centers, build the relationship with the veterans' employment representatives, because the veteran employment representatives are working with veterans. If you communicate your job needs to the veterans' employment representatives, we will try to make a good match of a qualified veteran to that job. And so it's about using the systems that we have in place and making making all avenues go to the workforce centers in Positively Minnesota. So that concludes the overview of the challenge and what we're currently doing to help the veterans find employment, and I will answer your questions.
Sure. Thank you. Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to ask the testifier, I have worked throughout the years on really trying to figure out the best strategies to help certain groups, predominantly people with disabilities, minorities, and I try to figure out how do we get policies in place to figure out how to open access and create opportunities. And what I have found throughout the years is kind of blanket approaches that really are applied to all in the same way do not work. And so as I hear you talk about, you know, really the needs that our veterans are facing, could you give us an overview of kind of a more detail that we know? To be more precise, I think that defining the needs in a very concrete way help us define policies that are more effective. So if we know kind of the disability of the person, the age of the person, the skill of the person, the gender of the person, et cetera, then we can really look at opportunities that can fit that profile, because in business and in jobs, that's, you know, we need to create something that fit that profile. And we were having some conversations recently about really understanding what our populations are so that we can design policies that can fit those profiles. So I would like to know if you have information that is more concrete about, you know, the group of veterans that are in need of these services. I'm particularly interested in really understanding the profile of our veterans in terms of age, skill, ability, gender, race, and how do we help them then, how do we help ourselves, you know, put in place something that truly responds to that profile need rather than just a blanket approach, do this, that may not actually help.
Ms. O'Reilly.
Mr. Chair, Senator, that is really the essence of the big challenge with the veteran population. The veterans represent all different sectors of Minnesota. 18 to 34, 34 up to, 65. There are veterans that are unemployed. They are across gender and racial lines. I think that trying to categorize veterans, as I tried to establish earlier, into any one category is going to not take into account the different skill set that a guardsman and a reservist will bring to the table, because they have had so many different experiences, not only in the military, but in their civilian population or in their civilian skill set. What we recognized is that veterans were not using the workforce centers. The workforce centers is a resource that's out there for the veteran. What we really hope to do is funnel the veterans into that. So then the veterans employment reps that are throughout the state will be able to work with the veterans one-on-one. We have done some surveys. The employer support of the Guard and Reserve did a survey prior to the particular units leaving over the past year. They do have some baseline data in regard to their age, their employment status. I do not have any of that information with me, but there is information available, but only for a very small number of our service members. For the most part, we do not know. We do not, as I said, DEED does not track veterans as a category, so I cannot even tell you that any percent of the veteran population between any age group is unemployed. So it's just a really vague.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to encourage our committee to look into that, Mr. Chairman, because part of the or creating an effective system is really to figure out, you know, what's out there. How can we help? It is not helpful to send a veteran to a resource center to look for a job that does not exist for him or for her. It is not helpful to open expectations about what is available to our veterans if we don't have a system that creates those opportunities. And so in the process, I think collecting this information, as you know, complex as it may be, it helps us understand the reality that our veterans are facing. What is, you know, really the skill? What is not the skill? So that we can, instead of saying, just go to this website and look for a job, and now you have access to it and you have a brochure, maybe the issue is training. The issue is access to more technology, issues of that nature. And so I would like to engage in that conversation with this committee about really looking for information that help us understand better what is the profile of the veteran so that we can actually institutionalize changes that helps the veteran get a job, not just get information about how to get a job that doesn't exist. Thank you.
Thank you. And I would agree with that, Senator Torres Ray. I don't know if this is something where we take a look at MDVA working closer with the Department of DEED and trying to develop some kind of a survey that they could help get the information that Senator Torres Ray was somewhat requesting. Does that make sense, Ms. O'Reilly?
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes, I do believe that makes sense. I think that there is many opportunities to look at a veteran's skill set and an individual's skill set and the training that they've had in the military combined with other training and see if there's opportunities to fast track them into an employment opportunity using customized training or something like that. Whether we're able to do a survey that will provide you that information in a short period of time, I am a little bit skeptical of whether we'd be able to do that. But I think
maybe, you know, as much as I don't want another job classification, we have 1,800 of them here in the state of Minnesota, and I think 1,400 sub-classifications. But even a job description, for better words, and for some reason coming to mind would be like military police. Mm-hmm. You know, what could happen there? Somebody coming back, is there an opportunity to pick up some kind of points? And there might be already, or grading system, which will allow them to fast track, say, through like Alexandria, the police academy in Alexandria, things like that. So, all right. Mr. McElney.
Mr. Chair, I'm Mike McElney, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs Legislative
Director. And the reason I didn't introduce you first is because I couldn't remember if you were coming here as a new commissioner or if you were still in the same position. So,
no.
No.
I appreciate that comment, Mr. Chair. But just to Senator Torres Ray's point, one of the challenges we face is that we can collect fairly good data on the veterans that are here currently in Minnesota. We've got various data collection points that we can draw information from DOD and other sources, the federal VA. But one of the challenges we face on any given day at the MEPS station at the Whipple building, when they're shipping soldiers, airmen, Marines, naval or sailors off to worldwide assignments, we don't know exactly when they're coming back. But what we do know is 60% of Minnesota's sons and daughters ship out and may or may not come back in a period of 2, 4, 6, or 20 years. And we know that, as Barb had mentioned, approximately 7% of the reservists will come back to Minnesota. 33% of those that are processed through the MEP station are National Guard troops that are going to come back. So we can kind of ascertain good data on about half of the veterans that we know about. So that's one of the challenges, Mr. Chair. You've heard the commissioner say time and time again, he predicts the tsunami of veterans coming back to the state of Minnesota. And that is one of the challenges, is to understand exactly how many that's going to be and when that's going to be. We do know, based on historical facts, that there's going to be a reduction in force. We can expect that to begin occurring as these wars and conflicts wind down. So one of the problems we face with unemployment is We have put some working groups together. We're identifying challenges and barriers, and we're overcoming them. But it's almost as if each time we identify a barrier or challenge and breach that, more veterans begin to filter in, and it's very difficult to keep pace and do what we need to do for the veterans.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Chair, also you mentioned the licensing. That is certainly a challenge. You know, service members go off to basic training. They go to military training schools. They get trained very well. They do their jobs. Nurses, for example, EMTs, those are all very good skills that they have within the military that they then have to go back and overcome some challenges in getting a license. So there are certainly things that should be put into place or that could be put into place to make that transition from a very technical job such as a military police officer to police officer in Minnesota to EMT or lifesaver within the military to EMT within Minnesota as well. So there are things that would definitely help.
All right. Thank you. Yes.
Thank
Senator
you, Mr.
Wager.
Chair. Thank you. Ms. O'Reilly or Mr. McElney, should a veteran have a statutory right to their job upon return?
Ms. O'Reilly or Mr.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Senator, the USERRA law, the federal law, does provide some statutory protection to the service member to guarantee employment upon return.
I think I know where you're going with this, Senator Wigger. I think Senator Bach has a bill he'll be bringing forward. We had planned on hearing that bill today, but he had a conflict. But I think we've looked at that, and I believe where Senator Bach is going is that his bill would give statutory right for a serviceman to sue the state of Minnesota if they were to lose their job while they were gone. So but that bill will be coming up here. Go ahead.
For either testifier, whether it's Senator Bach's proposal or just in addition to what the federal government has promulgated, if you see any additional requirements in addition to lip service that we think you should return, we want you to return, but we have a place for you to return. And, you know, so if there's any statutory language beyond just our good words of encouragement, would appreciate knowing that.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. McKelley.
Yes, Senator. And we do that. We look at our statutes periodically or quite often, actually, to determine if we're meeting the intent and the challenges that we face today and the challenges that we think we're going to face in the future. And so as we do approach those issues and determine that there's a need has changed, we try to bring that to the attention of the legislature and the governor so that they can take the appropriate action.
And further,
and
Senator
Mr. Chair,
Wager.
On that point, in your review of statutes, would there be one statute that you'd like us to change or more?
Mr. McKelley.
Mr. Chair. Senator Wager, at this point in time, no, I couldn't identify any one given statute that we have that we think would be a silver bullet. That's the issue we have within the department is we come in contact with a lot of veterans, and they each have their own unique challenges and their own unique issues, which is why we do have a variety of statutes that address various issues. So there's just not a silver bullet to say this is going to fix it. There are bills and legislation out there that will certainly even the playing field, we believe, in certain areas. But beyond that, there's not a single silver bullet to fix everything, Senator.
And, Mr. Chair, I didn't characterize anything we've ever offered as a silver bullet, no matter how good our intentions are, but you've outlined a very serious problem. And to the extent we can respond as policymakers, we have some remedies we'll be looking at. And while you're here, it's helpful to get the advice, especially, you know, based on all the input you've had. Mr. Chair, I'm wondering, will there be some follow up on coordination with DEED, with the veteran service officers, the campus reps that work with the veterans that we've appropriated funds for at the various schools, the registrars that process the credits that align with the job classifications. We know these issues are out there. It's tempting to legislate more, and we can, but if you don't think we need to do anything further on those points, I'll respect that.
Ms. O'Reilly, or?
Mr. Chair, Senator, absolutely. All of the agencies and the positions that you mentioned are groups that need to work together to try to identify those challenges. Everything from the continuity between a service member deciding to go to college and needing to get enrolled into the GI Bill. Having that veteran employment rep on campus is so important because it is overwhelming. Educational benefits are an overwhelming system that one tries to navigate. Having that person in place is invaluable. In addition, having that person in place to help the veteran who chooses to do an OJT or an apprenticeship program, having somebody help them enroll in the process, absolutely important. But again, those are all just one piece to that big puzzle. We have to all work together in order to resolve those issues. Minnesota State Colleges and University Systems have developed a wonderful program in their credit transfer, which helps align the military training into an educational program. It allows the veteran.
It's good, Mr. Chair, to know that boot camp can meet the FIED requirement.
Correct.
Well, and FIED and first aid, I think, but also if a veteran has, and every veteran has gone through various leadership schools, technical schools, all of those equate to college credit or can equate to college credit. The credit transfer system developed by MNSCU actually puts that in a form that makes sense and gives the veteran power as they walk into any school to say, this is what could be accepted at your school for college credit. This is very good for the educational system. We need perhaps something that would do the same thing for the employment system to say that, you know, truly, these are the skills that I have, and this is where it could correspond in the civilian world.
Right. We're gonna call up. We could go on and on with this, and I think we probably will be discussing this further. But Mr. Donay is here. If you'd like to come up, you had a few words. We have some time left here before we have to move on into the next two bills that we'd like to get through today. Mr. Donay, please introduce yourself.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Ralph Donay. I live in Elk River, Minnesota. I'm chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council of Minnesota. And that kind of sums it up right there. There's 34 veterans organizations that come together to try and help the legislature and help our veterans deal with legislative issues. My reason for talking today, I'm here to support Senator Daley's bill and any veterans bill that comes before you. To give you a little bit of background, when Senator Torres-Ray, part of what you asked, what does the veteran look like? I'm a veteran. I'm 66 years old. I have a college degree. I have my own business. So what do I look like? What does the young person, say the guard person that just comes back, what do they look like? What are their skills? It's really hard to put a one-fits-all hat on any veteran that's coming back. I would like to remind you that if you go throughout our state and look at the major industries that are here in our state, most of them were founded by veterans that came back from World War II. Up on the Iron Range, a lot of the major corporations that are up there were founded by veterans that came back. Korean veterans, when they came back, went back to school, got trained, started businesses. The current people coming back, you have to understand that the Guard is a little bit different than the average person that just went enlisted to go in the Navy, the Marine Corps, the Army, or whatever, and that they had a job here in Minnesota. They were supporting their family. They were supporting their community. They were going to school or whatever they were doing when suddenly we said, oh, excuse me, you're not going to do that for the next 18 months to 2 years. You're going to be gone. Boom, you're gone. You've left your family behind, and that's a big concern for a lot of these young veterans. What happens to my family? I have been lucky enough to be able to represent a lot of veterans in the state, and when I talk to veterans from other states, they are amazed at what we do in Minnesota for our veterans. And I would like to encourage all of you to keep that same spirit moving forward. We've come a long way, and if you go to some of the other states and they go, wow, you got that in Minnesota? I go, yep, that's one of the things we do. The Yellow Ribbon, that I went to a Military Child Education Coalition training that tries to emphasize all of the children in the state of Minnesota that are affected because one or more of their parents are gone, to get the schools to understand why Susie or Jimmy is acting up in school. It's because mom or dad's gone. So there are many programs. When I went to that program, I'd referred back to the Yellow Ribbon, and these people that were coming from California and Texas and all over to train us were just amazed that Minnesota had all these things to help our veterans. I'd like to remind you that the prime years of people earning money a lot of time are taken up in that space that they're in the military, whether it be 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 years, some of their prime earning years at the beginning of their job career is taken away because they're gone. They're in Iraq, they're in Afghanistan, they're in Japan, they're in Germany, wherever the military has decided to send them. So why do they need that special treatment? Because they have given up that block of their life. We sign a check to our country. Excuse me, I get a little emotional. That check includes our lives. We've said, here's the check, Senator. It's good all the way to giving my life for my country. And that alone should be reason enough to do anything that we can to help our veterans here in the state of Minnesota. MnDOT is currently readapting some things to really work with our veterans to get those young businessmen and women the opportunity to get going in Minnesota. We have to start somewhere. So your ability here is to give our veterans returning the opportunity to get that first step towards that business or that extra little bit of education that we add in that the GI Bill doesn't cover, or the deeds or the other programs. And some of the things that you mentioned here earlier, they're already working together. The deeds people, the National Guard folks, they all come to our UVLC meeting and we openly discuss what's going on. How is this happening? What's happening here? How can we help? So we have 34 different organizations that are coming together saying, how can we help the veteran? So that's our purpose. And I know you have a lot to discuss today, but anytime you would like to call on me for any information about veterans, please do so. And you can tell where I came from for 30 years, 1964 to 1994. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Donay. It's always great to have you here. You're a wealth of information, and thank you for your service too, sir. Thank you. We're going to move on to the fourth item on the agenda, which is Senate File 1599, Senator Daley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. As we've just heard, the unemployment rate among our veterans is a very important issue. It's a challenge that we face. And let us remember that we have more of these honorable men and women returning from the Middle East this spring and summer, members of our Minnesota National Guard. Successful reintegration into our communities needs to be one of our top priorities. Employment is a crucial vehicle in this transition. In 2011 in Washington State, they were the first state in the nation to authorize private sector employers to establish employment preferences for their veterans. Senate File 1599 is designed to do the same for us in Minnesota. My intent with this bill is that it will directly result in more veterans successfully finding employment when they come home from the Middle East, from Afghanistan, from wherever it is. And let me emphasize that this Veterans Preference Program is completely voluntary. It is not a mandate. It's not a requirement. This legislation will allow employers to grant preference to hiring and promotion to veterans, to a spouse of a veteran who has a service-connected permanent disability, and to a surviving spouse of a deceased veteran. With that, Mr. Chairman, if you could allow me, I'd like to have Mr. Popp come to the table, to the testifying table here, and provide some additional testimony.
All right, Senator Daley. Mr. Popp, would you come forth and introduce yourself? Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and senators. Should I just go ahead and talk?
Please introduce yourself just for the record.
Bill Popp with the Popp Communications, and I also am the founder and chairman of the Minnesota Military Family Foundation. Having worn the uniform of the U.S. military should not harm or hinder veterans' chance at getting a job, yet I believe it does. Members of the U.S. military are often painted inaccurately by books and movies, and I want to give you an example. I think we've all seen movies where a person has, a young male mostly, has been in trouble and done some bad things or had bad behaviors as had been before a judge. And the judge either says you're either going to go to jail or you have to go into the military. I think we've all seen movies like that. The inaccurate perception of military personnel painted by books and movies hurts the reputation of all military personnel. I think this preference would help to level the field. The news media covering a story of one bad soldier hurts the reputation of all soldiers. Again, this preference would help to level the field. Just a couple words about today's military. Today, less than 27% of the men and women between the ages of 17 and 24 qualify to be in the U.S. military. I'm going to say that again. Less than 27% of the men and women between the ages of 17 and 24 even qualify to be in our military. Today, the U.S. military has some of America's best people, yet they are painted inaccurately sometimes by books and movies and the news media. Today, 5 out of 6 soldiers are in supply and support positions. Soldiers learn the best supply and support technologies and techniques, and those are the same supply and support technologies and techniques that are needed in today's business. So the preference is not likely to give a veteran an advantage for a job they are not qualified for. This bill will not only help veterans, it will help their families. This bill will help to prove to veterans and their families that we do highly value them and their service. A veteran and their family should not be penalized because they served our country. I believe this bill will help to level the field in the competition for jobs. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Popp. Any questions for Mr. Popp? Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Pomp, I was wondering what you meant by only the low percentage that you said actually qualify for the service. Why is that?
Mr. Pomp.
Mr. Chair and Senator, about the low percentage?
Yeah.
It's the best of the best of America that qualify for the U.S. military today. Less than 27% of the men and women between the ages of 17 and 24 even qualify to be in our military. I'm trying to show that these are really good people.
Senator Goodwin.
Mr. Chair, I certainly do understand that, but I'm wondering why, what's holding others back from qualifying?
Mr.
Bomb.
Mr. Chair.
I just have to do that for the record so that people know who's speaking.
Right. I want to get it right.
Not that we wouldn't know your voice different from Senator Goodwin, but just to make sure.
I have a cold.
I apologize. Those statistics are like statistics I got from the military.
Mm. Okay, I'm interested, Senator Mr. Goodwin. Chair. I'm interested in that number, so and why that is that so many of our our young people would not qualify for the service. So maybe perhaps you could find that information out for me and get it back to us somehow.
Senator Goodwin, I'm sure we can have Mr. Halverson help us locate that information, and I'm sure it has a lot to do with the qualifications, but we should be able to find that, shouldn't we? Yes. We'll have that for you. Senator Wieger.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I would speculate it would be a combination of psychological, physical, and educational aptitude qualifications that are a part of that rigorous process. I just wanted to commend Mr. Pop. I think I hear you do a PSA announcement at least twice a day on different stations, and good job.
Oh, thank you, Senator. Thank you. Yeah. Any further questions for Mr. Pop? Any further testimony here before we move on with Senator Daley? I think, Mr. Donay, you had something just you would like to add.
A quick response to that. I was a Marine recruiter for 4 years, so an answer to your question, Senator Goodwin. It used to be they said if you could fog a mirror and stand up straight, you could get in the military. But because of the technological advances in the military, that is no longer the case. We must now have young men and women who can be educated. Not that our high schools aren't necessarily turning out an educated person, but they have to be able to learn. The entrance exams that they take to come into the military are much more difficult than they were, say, when I enlisted 40 years ago. The physical qualifications is another one that knocks a lot of them out. We keep hearing daily about how our students in school are obese and they're overweight. Well, that's another block to stop them from coming into the military. The high usage of drugs and things among our teenagers, that's another thing that knocks them out from being eligible to come into most of the services. So there are many factors involved here, but primarily I agree with the gentleman's assessment of what's going on, why so many are not qualified, ma'am. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Lilly.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I move that Senate File 1599 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Jobs and Economic Growth.
Senator Cohen.
Chairman, Senator Daley, a question if I might. I'm a big fan of vets' preference for all the obvious reasons. But in terms of this legislation, as you suggest, it's voluntary. I mean, if I'm the CEO of a company of 300 people and I want to establish preference for hiring veterans, I can do it right now. So I'm just trying to figure out how this legislation, like I said, I like where we've had vets' preference in public employment practices, but how would this work? How do you envision this working in terms of a private employer who can already do this?
Senator Daley.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen. Part of what you said, Senator Cohen, is true. There is federal law which emphasizes or allows veterans' preference. State law, which for state employees and federal employees, the veterans' preference, but it currently does not exist in the private sector, and that is why I'm offering this bill. To the best of my knowledge, I mean, we researched this very well, and I'm not sure where you're coming up with your information, but in the private sector, it's not allowed at this point in Minnesota.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, that's my question then. So what you're saying right now is that within the private sector in Minnesota, if I, as the CEO of a company of 1,000 people, want to establish a veteran's preference, I'm prohibited from doing that right now?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Daley.
Senator Cohen, that's correct.
Senator Cohen, maybe I could ask Mr. Halverson to try to articulate an answer to your question. Mr. Halverson?
The federal, Senator, Mr. Chair, the federal EEOC currently has a ruling that prohibits private sector veterans' preferences unless there's a state law that allows it otherwise.
Okay. Is that?
And Mr. Chairman?
Senator Daley.
And in response to that, that's why I'm proposing this legislation to allow, not mandate, but to permit private sector employers to do this.
Yeah, that's
Senator Cohen.
I didn't realize that was the case. That's okay. Helpful.
Any further discussion? Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for legal counsel related to that as well, and I want to make absolutely sure I state this for the record, that I believe this is important, and I believe that we need to do it, and I support it. I do, however, have questions with respect to the implementation of these type of policies, because although it is permissive, I would like to hear legal counsel as to what are the requirements in, for private businesses, counties, everyone, to actually keep a record of the effort. When we put these legislations, these pieces of legislation in place, what happens is that this is a permissive piece of legislation, yet it is in the legislation. And as a private business, I believe that there is an obligation to demonstrate that you made an effort, because if not, this is simply useless. So correct me if I am wrong with respect to the implications and ramifications in terms of what private businesses will have to do to document an effort that responds to the language we have in here, which says a private non-public employer may grant preference. Do they have to demonstrate that they made an effort to grant preference to a veteran, and what are the implications for that? Would they have to keep a record? I mean, there are some implications, mm-hmm. and I'd really want to be clear about that.
Ms. James?
Mr. Chair, Senator Torres-Rae, and members, there is no requirement in this statute that would require reporting on efforts. It's strictly voluntary. Mm-hmm.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. There is no implication at all. So in technical terms, there is no implicit mandate to that will exist unless it's specifically articulated in the law.
That's how I interpret it, Senator Torres.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want a clarification.
Senator Olson.
And Mr. Chairman, I suspect that the Jobs Committee would be looking at issues of that nature probably in greater detail than we would be expected mm-hmm. to.
Exactly. All right. Senator Wigger.
Mr. Chair, just a clarification again from legal counsel. I understand the federal concern that there needs to be permissive authority at the state level, but would the federal law preclude us from having this say shall grant instead of may grant? Do
Ms.
we have
James.
The state power to put shall instead of may?
Mr. Chair and Senator Wigger and members, the federal law reads like this. Nothing contained in this subchapter, meaning the EEOC law, shall be construed to repeal or modify any federal, state, territorial, or local law creating special rights or preferences for veterans. So that makes it clear that if we put must, it would still be allowable.
Does that answer your question, Senator Wigger?
Well, Mr. Chair, you probably know where I'm going. And I'll ask Senator Daley his advice on an amendment as appropriate that would replace may with must.
Well, Senator Wigger, I can tell you personally the chair is not interested in any mandate coming out of this committee towards businesses. I think this is permissive and allows a business the opportunity to create their veterans' preference. And I think it would be just another burdensome issue towards that business. Senator Daley, if you wanted to respond.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wigger, thank you for your thoughtful proposal. I know you are a huge supporter of veterans, and I very much appreciate everything that you have done throughout your senatorial career for our veterans. At this point, I would concur with the chairman on his thoughts for this particular bill.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Wigger.
Yeah, I realize this has a journey ahead, but I would move that the reference at line 1.7, permissive, be deleted. That at line 1.9, may be deleted and insert must. And at 1.12, may be deleted and insert must. And ask for a roll call.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Daley, have you checked on, does granting, even having the language granting permissiveness, provide any protection to businesses that wish to pursue this course of action in terms of other, any legal action that somebody might take if they gave this preference, if we don't have some authority for them?
Senator Daley.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I'm not aware of that.
So it went this, the Mr. Chairman and Senator Daley, so our action, approving your bill as it is, doesn't provide any employer protection if they do grant this preference.
Senator Daley.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, to my knowledge, no. The entire intent of this legislation is to permit employers to grant a veteran's preference in the private sector, so that they may, because at this point right now, due to the federal law that Mr. Halverson had previously mentioned, they are not permitted at this point.
Ms. James, could you weigh in on this question from Senator Olson?
Sure, Mr. Chair and Senator Olson and members. Subdivision 3 of this bill puts in statute that granting a preference in under this section doesn't violate any local or state equal employment opportunity law. So that takes care of that part. With respect to federal law, there's a case on the statute that I previously read, Massachusetts v. Feeney, 442 U.S. 256, that's decided this issue. It's upheld the constitutionality of veterans' preference laws. And so any lawsuit that someone would bring would be dismissed.
Senator Olson.
So
okay.
It does provide that protection for those who take that course of action.
Yes, we thank didn't.
Ms. James.
Yes.
Okay,
Ms.
thank
Chair.
You.
Senator Hayden.
Now that we're having a robust discussion, something came to my mind, Mr. Chair. It doesn't, and to Senator Daley, it doesn't speak of the disposition of the veteran at time that they are discharged. So what if a service member is discharged with less than honorable conditions, general, or even a dishonorable, former member of the armed forces be eligible for the veterans' preference?
Senator Daley.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hayden, there is a definition of veteran, and Ms. James is nodding her head. She's got this specific statute. I believe it's 197.447, and if she could go through that for everyone, that may be helpful.
Ms. James.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, the definition of veteran is set out in 197.447, and I don't think I do actually have the exact text, but that definition includes a requirement of honorable discharge.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Lilly.
Has the motion been made?
Mm-hmm. He made a motion.
Yes, the motion has. You made the motion. We have an amendment by Senator Wigger.
All right. I'd like to make an amendment to the amendment.
Go ahead,
Mr. Chair. I would like to modify the wording to instead of say must to must consider granting preference, both in line 1.9 and in line 1.12.
Do you have that, Ms. James?
I believe. Mr. Chair, Senator Lilly and members, the motion is to amend at line 1.12 the word may, delete may, and insert instead must consider granting.
Okay.
And then on line 1.9, delete may and insert in its place, must consider, on line 1.9, delete may grant and instead insert must consider granting.
There's a question, Ms. James. Was Senator Wigger's amendment just for line 1.9, or did he also include 1.12?
Mr. Chair and members, Senator Wigger's amendment was to make amendments to lines 1.7, 1.9, and 1.12.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. So just we have Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got real concern about, Senator Wigger's amendment and also the amendment on the amendment brought by Senator Lilly. What happens if an employee, if an applicant for a job doesn't think the employer considered it? Do they have a potential lawsuit against the employer? Where that is kind of getting to state of mind. And, I mean, in theory, if a veteran such as Senator Daley were to go apply for a job and conclude they were supposed to consider my veteran status but they didn't, would he then have potentially a legal cause of action? And I think we are taking something fairly simple and fairly benign, which is the idea that we value our military personnel such that we want to allow employers to take that into consideration. And with Senator Wigger's amendment, we're turning it now into a government mandate. With Senator Daley's amendment on the amendment, which I acknowledge softens the effect of Senator Wigger's amendment, we now have potentially created a cause of action if the employer didn't go properly through a thought process that we got a completely different animal we're looking at now than was brought in by the author.
Thank you. Senator Torres Ray, did you?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I couldn't have said it better.
All right. Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chair, I acknowledge the advice and I withdraw my amendment.
Senator Lilly withdraws his amendment to the amendment. Senator Wigger, I'm trying to get a handle on, do you have a specific program or something that you're trying to get at here by changing this wordage?
Very sincerely, Mr. Chair, I want more vets hired, and there's a problem. There needs to be additional safeguards, preference put in law. I think a good case was made earlier in the meeting about the hundreds of thousands of Minnesotan veterans that are here that are coming back, and this just mandates a preference. It does not require the hiring. It mandates the preference. I'm comfortable with that in light of the serious issue that's been documented, again, just recently.
Well, Senator Wigger, I understand where you're coming from because I've always been very concerned about putting our veterans back to work. Gosh only knows how many we're going to have coming home and where our unemployment is. But I think it would be nice if we as a legislative body could set policy that would release the handcuffs from businesses so that they can expand and create new job opportunities. And I'm looking at this myself personally as just another handcuff, a mandate that is put on our businesses that are already stretched. I think we have many businesses out there that do whatever they possibly can to hire returning veterans because they know of their training and their knowledge and what they've done for this country. I would just, for myself personally, as one that has served, and as a business owner, I would like to ask you to withdraw that, and maybe you and I together could work on programs that we could bring forward if that is such a concern, and have time to go through this and think about it. But that would be totally up to you, Senator Wigger.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cohen.
Well, Mr. Chairman, let me suggest as one who has not served that I'm struck by the generational change. I'm not talking about this table, but within the Senate. But I think the problem we have is that, you know, the Vietnam era vets were unseen and unheard, and there's been a lot of much greater attention, at least to my sense, maybe it's I'm older, but that there's been much greater attention paid to the problems of the returning vets over these last X number of years. I mean, there was an article yesterday in the New York Times. Now, it was not in regard to employment, but it was a lengthy article about a burn program for vets who had sustained significant burn injuries, and the fact that within the military medical system, the treatment was to do what you could to make sure they can live, but not necessarily provide, say, facial improvement if they were facial burns. And there's a program in the country now, a couple of hospitals, where they are trying to get vets to come to this hospital to have voluntary surgery for these purposes. And I think there's much more of an awareness now. You know, the World War II generation came home, you had the GI Bill of Rights, you had so many people coming out of the service. I mean, everybody was in the service in World War II who could serve. So that the societal and political pressure was such that you couldn't ignore it. The problem with Vietnam was, given some of the controversy over the war, whether fair or unfair, that I think the Vietnam vet was kind of shoved aside. We've learned from those mistakes. And I think what Senator Wieger is attempting to do is to take it to a progression that certainly matches what has become more of the societal understanding of the difficulty, as indicated in the testimony earlier. And I would hope we'd take a serious look at what Senator Wieger is trying to do. And like I said, I suggest that as one who did not serve and doesn't have the experience of Mr. Chairman yourself or I think Senator Daley, you know, some of the folks around this table who have served, you know, I find it a little bit tiresome. Not tiresome, that's the wrong word. Tragic to see the folks. I've increasingly stopped my car to hand a $5 or a $10 bill to the person standing on the street, you know, by the freeway entrance, you know, homeless vet. And if this moves this along that much further, I think we ought to support Senator Wieger.
Thank you. Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I have a question for Mr. Daley, both in relation to Senator Daley, I'm sorry. Both in relation to Mr. Wieger, Senator Wieger's amendment and to your bill in general. I'm wondering why you didn't restrict this to veterans who were in combat or conflict or something that pertained to any veteran that had served in a war zone, because there's quite a difference. And as you heard and I heard at the joint meeting this last summer about the veterans coming home, how sad it is, the condition that they end up in and without jobs and in the suicides and so forth that happen. Those are among vets that served in Iraq or Afghanistan or, you know, even the Vietnam vets who have had a lot of suicides, a lot of illnesses and so on from the war. So why are we making it so broad as to cover all vets rather than – I just think that these vets that had served really in a conflict really deserve a preference, and it would really help them. And I'm wondering why we're just expanding it to any vet.
Senator Daley.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Goodwin, you know, service members don't get to decide where their deployment is. They don't get to decide if they're going to Iraq or Afghanistan or if they're going stateside. It is the needs of the military. So you go where you're called. And so those who have served honorably, I think, deserve this measure.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't doubt that they deserve our gratefulness and everything. But we've got a lot of special groups that are having a hard time getting jobs. And I'm thinking that, I mean, this is not against the veterans. My father was a veteran, and my brother-in-law died from being sprayed with Agent Orange during his service in Vietnam. So, but what this is trying to get the people that need those jobs the most, those jobs. So if they've got two veterans side by side, one has served in conflict and one hasn't, that's a very different decision to make. And I really think the ones that are coming back that have served in a conflict are the ones that are having the most severe problems, both with just adjusting and with getting a job. And that having a job would certainly help that adjustment.
Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chair, let's try this one more time. I'd like to offer an amendment to the amendment.
Go ahead.
And what I'd like to do is amend line 1.9 instead of must grant to is encouraged to, and the same on line 1.12. And my goal in doing this is that I do believe we're trying to get at the heart of the issue here, and that is to offer a preference to veterans who have served their country so nobly, and at the same time recognizing that we do not want to create overzealous burdens on the business community that is trying to create jobs and trying to grow jobs in this tough economy. So I think by doing this, we would accomplish both of those.
On the amendment to the amendment, all in favor?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Wicker.
Yeah. I respectfully oppose it, and I don't believe it's overzealous to just put in a preference. It's not a requirement. It's just offering a preference for the reasons stated earlier. So I have no problem advocating that there be a preference. And I'd ask for a roll call vote.
Thank you. Senator Thompson.
Well, Mr. Chair, if we're going down this road, we really need time because essentially a cause of action in law is being created by Senator Wiegers' change. That if somebody doesn't do something that they must do under the law, does an applicant for a job then have a legal claim? If so, what are the extent of the damages? How do we determine the damages? Should there be liquidated damages? We have just gone down a completely different road. This is not a minor change. This is taking a let's help veterans by making certain that veteran-friendly employees are able to take into consideration veteran status when hiring, to creating another government mandate that, if not followed, creates potential legal actions, and we're not dealing with the same issue anymore.
All right. Roll call has been requested and is granted.
On the amendment.
Senator Gazelko.
Thank you, Senator Perry. Senator Daley, would it be your preference that we accept Senator Lilly's amendment to the amendment and then reject the overall amendment?
It's an excellent
question. Senator Daley.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gazelko, it's a great question. Before I answer that, just so all of us are clear, let's have counsel or staff go through the amendment and the amendment to the amendment so we all are certain what we're voting on.
Ms. James.
Senator Wiegers' amendment was to, in line 1.7, delete permissive. On line 1.9, delete may and insert must. And on line 1.12, delete may and insert must. Senator Lilly's amendment to the amendment is on line 1.9 to delete must grant and replace it with is encouraged to grant. And on line 1.12, delete must grant and insert in its place is encouraged to grant.
Senator Daley.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gazelka, I would be supportive of the amendment to the amendment.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to hear from legal counsel about the implications for private companies to document a process that will actually reveal their effort to do that. There is a difference between may and is encouraged to. And I would like to know what are the legal implications for a company to document that process and the legal ramifications for that.
Ms. James.
Mr. Chair, Senator Torres-Ray, and members, there is nothing in this statute that's going to create any requirement of recording. If there is any requirement of reporting or recording or anything of that nature in other employment law, I don't know.
Thank you. Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Senator Torres-Ray.
So the change in language from May to is encouraged to is the same in your view in terms of the legal requirement, unless we have specific language that requires that documentation. The terms that we're using right now are similar. Or
Ms. James?
Mr. Chair, Senator Torres-Ray, and members, yes, the change in language doesn't affect anything with respect to any reporting within this statute. But if there are any reporting requirements elsewhere in law, I don't know how it would apply to either set of language.
Secretary will call the roll.
Senator Cohen?
No.
Senator Daley?
Aye.
Senator Hayden?
No.
Senator Gazalka?
Aye.
Senator Goodwin?
No.
Senator Lilly?
Yes.
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Senator Thompson?
Yes.
Senator Torres-Ray?
Yes.
Senator Wieger?
No.
Senator Perry?
Yes.
And Senator Carlson?
Yes.
On a vote of 8-4, the amendment to the amendment does pass. We have the Lilly motion on the floor as amended. Senator Cohen.
So, Mr. Chairman, now we've got the bill in front of us.
Yes, we do.
So I'd move to amend on line 1.9 to substitute the language we just added and insert must, and then on line 112 do the same thing and ask for roll call.
Senator Cohen, I believe we've already decided that here at the committee. Ms. James, can you?
Mr. Chairman, it's an amendment.
Excuse me, I asked Ms. James for.
Mr. Chair and members, we have adopted Senator Lilly's amendment to the amendment, and so before the committee at the moment is an amendment with the language as Senator Lilly proposed. Senator Cohen is now moving to amend that amendment to replace on line 1.9 must grant with, or excuse me, is encouraged to grant with must grant, and on line 1.12 replace is encouraged to grant with must grant.
Did we, Ms. James, did we just not go through that, the must?
His amendment will return the language to the language proposed by Senator Wieger in his amendment,
We've already voted on that, correct?
Mr. Chair.
If it might be heard on my amendment.
Senator Cohen.
Well, Mr. Chairman, with the Lilly Amendment, we now have Senate file 1599 in front of us. So now it's open to other amendments. And
we have your amendment.
Yep. Excuse me, sir?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen.
Senator Olson.
He amended Senator Wieger's amendment.
Right.
So we haven't voted on Senator Wieger's amendment yet. So you don't have the bill before you.
Right.
We've got it. We haven't voted on Senator Wieger's amendment as amended by Senator Lilly.
I'm sorry.
We have to go back.
Okay.
All right. Now we're ready to vote on the amendment to Senator Wieger's amendment. Or Wieger's amendment, as amended, excuse me. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
He has a roll call.
No, did you?
Yes, he did.
Oh, okay. There was a roll call asked and will be granted. Secretary, take the roll.
Senator Carlson.
I'm going to pass for temporarily, please.
Senator Cohen.
No.
Senator Daley.
Aye.
Senator Hayden. Senator Gazalka.
No.
Senator Goodwin.
No.
Senator Lilly.
It's your amendment. No.
No.
Senator Olson. Senator Thompson.
No.
Senator Torres Ray.
No.
Senator Uyghur.
No.
Senator Perry.
No.
Senator Carlson?
No.
And Senator Olson?
No.
And Mr. Chair?
Senator Daley?
Am I allowed to change my vote before it's closed?
Yes, you are.
I'd like to change it to no.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Thompson?
The question, as I understand it now, we have rejected Senator Uyghur's amendment as amended by Senator Lilly, and therefore we are back to the original form of the bill. Is that correct?
As soon as I close, excuse me? Let me, yes, that will be the case. I have to have the vote total, please. 11-1. Being there 11 noes and one yay, the Uyghur amendment does not pass. Now we are back to the original language of part unamended. A roll call has been asked for and is granted.
No roll call.
Or wasn't there on that? Okay. All those in favor, Senator Cohen.
Okay, so Mr. Chairman, now I would move to amend on line 1.9 to substitute must for may and line 1.12 substitute must for may.
No. All right. Could you just read that back, Ms. James?
Mr. Chair, members, the motion from Senator Cohen is to amend the language, the original language, in the following way. On line 1.9, delete may and replace it with must. On line 1.12, delete may and insert must.
On the Cohen... A roll call has been requested and granted. On the Cohen amendment.
Excuse me. No, we've already been through that.
Secretary, take the roll.
Senator Carlson.
No.
Senator Cohen.
Yes.
Senator Daley.
Pass.
Senator Hayden.
Yes.
Senator Gazelka.
No.
Senator Goodwin.
Yes.
Senator Lilly.
No.
Senator Olson.
No.
Senator Thompson.
No.
Senator Torres Ray?
No.
Senator Uyghur?
Yes.
Senator Perry?
No.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Daley?
Put me down for a no, please.
On a vote of 8-4, 8 noes, 4 yeas, the motion does not prevail. Senator Lilly renews his motion. That Senate file, whatever, or the Daley, 1590, or Senator Lilly.
Senator Lilly
moved that Senate file 1599 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Jobs and Economic Growth. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you. We are going to move on with our next bill. Senator DeKreif, people have driven a ways. We have had some spirited testimony, and I thank everyone for that. So, Senator DeKreif, we're going to see how long we can get testimony going here and how quickly and how fast, maybe, before we get kicked out of the room here at 3 o'clock. So welcome to the committee, Senator Daley. Please state your name, and you may proceed. Or DeKreif, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to try to move this quickly here because I suspect we're going to be under a time constraint. Mr. Chair and members, I have the H2 amendment that I'd like to offer. It's basically a delete-all amendment. To Bill Senate File 1597.
Yeah.
Okay, he can do it as an author. Senator Lilly offers the A2 amendment.
Okay. I'm sure everyone is aware that since post 9/11.
Excuse me, Senator DeCray. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. All right, proceed, Senator DeCray.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sure everyone is aware that post 9/11 veterans in Minnesota are struggling with unemployment rates north of 20%. Last fall, in fact, the Star Tribune ran an article highlighting the fact that 22.9% of recently returned veterans don't have a job. Only Michigan and Indiana veterans have a tougher time. Clearly, the best way to get veterans back to work is through broad, sustained economic growth. As we work toward that goal, the state can help in other ways. We all recognize veterans possess skills beneficial to the workplace and our economy as a whole. Their experience, training, and leadership qualities are important to our state, and we must do more to make sure these skills are not left on the bench. My bill intends to address veterans' unemployment by further encouraging the administration and the department commissioners to make greater efforts to hire veterans and give counties the option to establish their own voluntary preference programs. If I could, I'll just introduce the bill quickly. And the first part of the bill is the part that the two folks sitting next to me would testify to. Article 1, the preference we are most familiar with at the point system preference where veterans qualify for potential state job receive a bonus of 5 or 10 points added to their score on certain evaluations for a state job. Our system currently mirrors the federal government, and I'm looking to strengthen those provisions to 10 points for veterans and 15 points for disabled veterans. Article 2, my bill would strengthen the veterans' preference in state procurement. I bump up the current 6% preference to 8%. The preference will allow discretion for the commissioners. In Article 3, I separate and strengthen the veterans' preference for DOT contracting. The commissioner still has some discretion as to the percentage up to 6%, but is compelled to award some preference, must versus may. And I include the option to allow for expedited determination of small business eligibility for the preference. And lastly, in Article 4, I provide the option for counties to offer preferences in contracting just as the state does. The portion of the bill, Article 1, is where we're trying to give hiring preference on state jobs. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to introduce a couple of veterans. Sitting to my left is a man I consider a good friend. I met Tom McLaughlin when he was riding with me with the Minnesota Patriot Guard. I'm a former ride captain, one of the 20 ride captains in the state. And Tom McLaughlin and I have spent we've spent hours on the motorcycle leading welcome back missions, which are the most fun thing we can do, is to bring soldiers back to reunite them with their families. And we've cried together at funerals. I'd like to introduce Tom McLaughlin.
Welcome, Mr. McLaughlin. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair and committee, Tom McLaughlin in Mankato, Minnesota. And I am also the 2nd District Legislative Chair for the Veterans of Foreign Wars.
Mr. McLaughlin, thank you for traveling this distance and waiting this long, and you may proceed with any testimony you have.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I'm here basically today to comment on the part of this bill that deals directly with hiring veterans in state positions. As many of you know, when I came home from Vietnam during that era, veterans lost veterans' preference in state hiring in the state of Minnesota, and even disabled veterans. And in recent times, you know, we're talking jobs for our newly returning veterans. I have a couple examples of where veterans have come home. They've gone to the college, in my case, Minnesota State Mankato. They've finished up. They've gotten their degree. They have been interning and work studying for the Department of Natural Resources. And in that process, they were offered a position, an entry-level position, and were told that they would start in the summer after they graduated. And in one particular case, this veteran was disabled. And 2 weeks before they were due to start the position, they received a call from St. Paul noting that that particular district did not have enough people in protected classes. And the veteran was denied the job, even though the veteran himself was 70% disabled, rated by the Veterans Administration. I thought I was up on veterans benefits and veterans programs in Minnesota. Even I had thought that veterans were protected in state positions if they were disabled or non-disabled. But a protected class right now overrules any position that a veteran may have. They are guaranteed an interview if they're disabled, that's pretty much all they're guaranteed. So with me is Luke Wynette. He's a recent graduate of MSU and kind of has his own story.
Please introduce yourself. And
Chairman, my name's Luke Wynette. I'm from Mankato, Minnesota.
Please continue with your testimony.
I'm one of these veterans that he speaks of, not that one in particular, but I've been applying for state jobs for, I'm at work now currently, but I was applying for some state jobs, and I'm an Iraq disabled vet, and I'd apply for 5-6 jobs a week that were in my field that I was well qualified for, and I never received even a callback.
All right.
I'm here.
And Mr. Chair, the thing to note is that many of these veterans are going to school on the Volk Rehab Program, which is a federal program. In addition to the GI Bill, they're able to opt for Volk Rehab if they're disabled. So these veterans are graduating. They're qualified for these state positions, and many times they don't even get an interview.
Thank you. Senator DeKreif, do you have any other testifiers, or is there anybody else in the audience that have traveled to come to testify on this right here?
Mr. Chair, not at this time. These are the two that have traveled some distance to get here.
All right. Well, my intent is to move forward one next step. I believe Senator Wigger has an amendment that he would like to offer that will help shore up this bill and be very good. Is that correct, Senator Wigger?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Would you like to move that at this time?
Yes, I'll offer the A3 amendment.
Senator Wigger offers the A3 amendment. Would you like to explain it, Senator?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members, this would allow a cause of action for an employee, a former employee, or prospective employee of the state who is aggrieved by the state's violation of the Uniformed Services Employment and Reemployment Rights Act in the federal government, which was referred to earlier by counsel. This was introduced, Senator Bach was the chief author, and I thank you, Senator Perry, for giving me the ability to offer this here.
Well, Senator Wigger, absolutely. I think we had a discussion with Senator DeKreif. And we'll have Mr. Halverson kind of go through the reasoning for this amendment and as they're getting the copies handed out here. And I do this because I believe this is the right time and the right bill to see this amendment moving forward. And Senator Wigger, I appreciate you coming forward with that. And so if Mr. Halverson could explain the amendment while we're getting copies to everyone.
Generally, there's a number of federal labor laws that are in place that if the state violates a federal labor law, they do not have immunity from lawsuit, from I believe it's civil suit in the amendment. USERRA is one of those federal labor laws that there is no, the state retains immunity. And so what we're doing with this amendment would be to put USERRA on the same footing as other federal labor laws and have the state liable if they break that federal labor law. Am I correct there, Council?
Ms. James?
Mr. Chair and members, I'm not familiar with the USERRA law, so I can't help on that without research.
And I can go back. There was, and Mr. Halverson, maybe we can explain. This has come up, whether it should make any difference, but I'm in your decision as we move forward. But I can tell you that this has come up in the House twice. Last year it came up. I believe it was a unanimous positive vote for this. And then it just got set back, and it was just brought up on the floor, I believe, this morning. I believe it was the same unanimous vote. I can check. It's a Representative Dill bill. We just felt that it matched so well. And unfortunately, the author of what was going to be the bill could make it today, and we felt we could move this forward. Do you think it's necessary to give the background of why this is brought up?
Mr. Chair, members, the story behind this is a constituent of Northern Minnesota constituent of Representative Dill and Senator Bach, I believe, after returning back from tours of duty in Southwest Asia. He was not granted a return to his job, and there's a question as to whether or not his job definition went away or that they just wouldn't give him his old job back, and he didn't have legal recourse to clarify that through the court system. That's my best understanding.
All right. Thank you very much. And of course, this also gives us an opportunity to dual track this. If the senator wants to bring this forward at a later date, we'll try to get him on the docket. But this way, we can move this forward at the same time. Any questions on this amendment? All right. If not, all in favor of the Uyghur Amendment, which is A3, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Amendment carries. Thank you. Do we have any other veterans? Because Senator DeKreif, we're on a time constraint. But as long as we've taken care of the veterans and those who traveled, I'd like to bring this up next Wednesday. We'll put it top on the agenda, and we'll finish it up and move it forward. Is that okay, Senator?
Mr. Chair, that would be fine with me.
We will. I will then lay Senate File 1597 on the table. Thank you very much. That completes all the duties here today of the committee. We'll be back on Wednesday at 1 o'clock. Meeting is adjourned.